Every great company starts the same way, with a dream. Not a pitch deck, not a spreadsheet, but a vision. And behind every entrepreneur is the same starting point, a belief that something better is possible and the willingness to take on the risk trying to build it. Welcome to Dreaming Big. I'm Alexis Allen, and I'm a relationship manager on the Texera Locker Room Group here in the New York City office at UBS. I've spent the last decade working alongside founders across industries and stages. From ideas scribbled on napkins to companies scaling faster than anyone expected, I have seen what it really takes to turn vision into reality. And what has always drawn me is not just the outcome. It is the optimism, the grit, and the ability to hold a vision long before anyone else believes in it. On Dreaming Big, I sit down with entrepreneurs to talk about where that dream started, the moments that shaped them, the pivots they did not plan, what they're building, who they're becoming, and the lives they're trying to live along the way. And so we go deep into identity, turning points, joy, and the season where that dream felt fragile but somehow survived. This isn't just a podcast about startups. It's about making something out of nothing, about protecting an idea long enough for it to become real, and about the courage to keep going day after day. And so whether you're building your first company, scaling your fifth, investing in a founder, or simply drawn to people who see the future before it exists, this is for you. If you'd like to connect or share your story, you can reach me at alexis.allen@ubs.com. Now, this is Dreaming Big, and so let's dive in. Some dreams are born in boardrooms, where others are born on a flight from Berlin to Moscow at 2 a.m., watching someone else eat the meal you made for them while you're stuck with airport Fritos. And that's where Kristen O'Connor was when the vision for Superdirt Foods hit her. She was working as a private chef for A-list actors like Leonardo DiCaprio, Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, while traveling the world making sure that they had perfectly balanced, nutrient-dense meals at any hour of the day. From that moment on, Kristen spent the next 6 years building the solution for the masses. What I found most compelling about her story is that she didn't quit her day job to chase this dream. She worked 7 days a week as a celebrity chef while developing recipes, finding manufacturers, raising capital from family and friends, running a Kickstarter campaign, and building a brand from scratch. Kristen's career has been a series of unconventional pivots, each one driven by curiosity, passion, and a willingness to follow her gut, both literally and figuratively. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Kristen O'Connor, founder of Superdirt Foods. Now let's dive in. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for joining me. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. It's such a treat.
So obviously you've had an amazing career and you worked as a private chef for some extraordinary names. I would love to hear about your background and the original start of your career.
Yeah, I went to grad school for art therapy, so it was a bit of a pivot, but I discovered healthy eating through my own health issues and started really actively pursuing cooking for health specifically. Pitched a show to Food Network, ended up producing for them, and then wrote cookbooks for the blood type diet with Dr. Peter Diadamo. And then based on that, I got my first client sort of accidentally, which was really interesting.
I would love to hear more about the cookbook experience because I know a number of people who are aspiring authors, and that's a process in and of itself. And so it's amazing to be a published cookbook author. Tell me about what that experience was like.
Yeah, I think it was a bit unique to this situation. I drafted my own cookbook and then I saw Dr. Diadamo because my mom was ill and she went to see him. And so I would take her to appointments and told him about this book. And he was like, actually, I would love for you to write cookbooks for me, because he looked at the book and liked it. And, you know, and so I was hired for, I think it was a 9-month period. I also had had one of my like massive knee surgeries. I've had 17 knee surgeries. So I was recovering from knee surgery with my leg like on a stool, recipe testing about 5 recipes a day. And I had 9 months to do 4 books. There were 250 recipes each. And I took the photos, wrote the recipes, invented them, and created the book. So that was quite a process.
That is quite a process. And it's cool to hear a little bit about the behind the scenes of it. But it's an amazing accomplishment nonetheless. So that gets published. And then you start working with some private clients. Tell me about what that experience was like, because I know that that is kind of the precursor to what led to Superdirt Food.
Yeah, It was pretty serendipitous. I was at a book launch party for my book, and somebody who's a trainer showed up, and he happened to train celebrities and connected me with the first client. So my first ever private chef client, and I had no intention of being a private chef, was honestly one of the biggest celebrities on the planet. My expectation going in was so low in the sense of turning it into a career. This is an amazing opportunity and experience. I'm going to give it everything that I have and just see what happens. And I used the blood type diet for him in particular, and he was really healthy. Somebody told me that his eyes were bluer at the end of it, that knew him very well. And I was like, okay, well, that's pretty fun. I loved it. I worked on film sets, and my first job was in a cook truck, like 12 hours a day. And it was unbelievably fast paced. And it was an incredible experience.
So obviously you had your hands in a lot of different things, and you probably really got to know each of your clients on a deep level. That's a unique experience of really being involved in someone's personal life and being invested in their outcomes from their nutrition and their food during the original period of that part of your career. What are some of the takeaways that you had and the best learnings from that experience?
That's a really good question. Everyone is so unique. Like, their bodies are unique, their personalities, what drives them. I studied art therapy, and I went to NYU. So the basis of that was in psychology more so than art. And I have such a huge passion for that. And it really came into play with my clients and really understanding their motivation around food and really synthesizing all of that information to be able to meet them, not just where they're at, but like what their goals are, and to be able to help achieve those goals with them. And one of the things that really struck me along the way was, like, this was with my second client, was that I didn't get into this just to cook for celebrities. I really genuinely care about health and the well-being of my clients. And it was a little bit tested at the beginning of that, you know, working relationship. And I was like, look, I'm out of here. Like, if this is going to be unhealthy for you, I'm out. Because I had to help him put on 30 pounds of muscle in 3 months. And the doctor, advising, wanted to just like jump him into a high caloric intake. And he was extremely ill from it. And so, you know, I was like, that's not how I'm going to do this. We can phase you in pretty quickly, but you're going to be phased in. So it's a matter of also just holding your own standards and not getting wrapped up, especially with clients like that who are told yes all the time, given everything they ask for, you know, not by their own fault, but just how society treats them, that it became really clear to me how passionate I was actually about my standard of and wanting to really stick with that, because otherwise there's genuinely no point to me to doing my job.
So I imagine that chapter of your career was pretty defining in terms of, you know, working for yourself, establishing your brand, probably a lot of learning on the fly. And during that time, you had shared with me that you had kind of a clear realization on a flight with one of your clients. And then once you had this idea, what started coming from that?
Yeah. So I was working 7 days a week. I was working with these like very high profile clients. So I didn't have actually a lot of time to take really good care of myself, specifically when traveling. So I was on this insane 10-day press tour with a client of mine. And we were on a flight kind of in the middle of the night from Berlin to Moscow. And I was watching him eat this like perfectly crafted meal for his objectives. And it was so healthy and clean. And I had this basket of plain offerings, which is bagged chips, salty, fatty, blah, 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 or just like nuts. And it really struck me that, you know, on the go, I don't know why we don't have a really good option that kind of like ticks all the marks and is a balanced, just snack that has ingredients that matter in them for your body. And I was like, okay, well, it doesn't exist. I'm going to make it. And that's how Superdirt was born.
It's such a relatable experience. And, you know, I feel like I frequently experience that where we're on the go, we're in between a lot of meetings. We don't have time to, you know, necessarily make ourselves a full meal. And then certainly when you're traveling a lot, there are such limited options, both in the airport and on a plane, to actually choose healthy, good for you food that's nutritious. And so I love that not only did you spot a problem that is super relatable, but then you were like, I'm actually going to solve this. So you have this idea for your own food company. Now talk to me about product development. Because what I love is that Ballers isn't just another kind of protein bar that we all know and it's familiar, but you're putting vegetables in there. And there are a lot of better for you food and wellness brands that are getting you know, shelf space in retail and in consumers' minds, but that's really hard. And so how do you differentiate yourself from what was already out there? And also, how hard is it to make something that's actually healthy that really tastes very good?
Oh, it's extremely challenging. We're currently doing a little bit of a revamp of our formulas now. So I put this product out a year and a half ago, and there's so many things that come into play when you develop a product and then develop it with a co-packer and then put it out into the world. You see all these different variations of it and you experience it in all these different ways that if you're right away seeing things that could improve, you just go, you do it and do it sooner than later. So that's where we're at now. I just got a blender, like a really good blender, and started mixing ingredients. And I started researching how to incorporate in the most nutritious way things like matcha or moringa or maca and vegetables. Should they be dehydrated? Should they be freeze-dried? Like all of these different things. And then mixing it all together and trying to figure out, well, how does it bind? And I took that stage very, very slowly, mostly because I was still working 7 days a week as a private chef and it just wasn't reasonable. You know, I had little breaks in between films or jobs where I would focus solely on it. But also because there was so much discovery in that phase and I had to be very adaptable. And so I was and have been and still am very, very adaptable with how these evolve while maintaining the same premise I had with my clients, which is there is only one purpose for this. It should taste amazing and it should be equally good for you. And if it isn't, I'm not doing it. And that's just, it's just how I feel about it. I'm not here to just make a snack because I want to make a snack and be a snack lady. It's because I think we all deserve to have food out there that is accessible, that has real quality ingredients. And achieving that and having it be shelf stable and out into the world is super challenging.
It is really challenging. And I love to hear about the reality of the fact that you still had your full-time job. You hadn't kind of come up with this idea and immediately quit your job and gone all in on this. You did it in a thoughtful sequence. So you come up with the concept of Baller as your product testing and researching. You come up with this really interesting name, Super Dirt. I would love to hear about how you landed on that really bold name.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because we had many names before. And then it just came to me. I was like, you know, this is such a heavy subject in a way of talking about health and nutrition and all these things. And I'm not a heavy person. Like when it comes to my approach with my clients or anything, it's more of a assuredness and passion, but not heaviness, right? And so why can't there be like lightness around it? And the reality is when you research health and in terms of crops and in terms of food and how we grow, the soil is the first place. It is the place that has to be healthy in order for our food to be healthy that grows out of that soil. The food takes the nutrients from the soil. It's so important that we have healthy soil. So Super Dirt is a nod to that.
It's brilliant. And the creativity around naming and branding is really important, but the meaning behind it just makes a lot of sense because similar with humans, you need to have that foundation really to be strong and to support the rest of your life. And so nutrition obviously is one of the first elements to that. I want to hear about at the beginning, financing is really important because obviously you're product testing on the side, but when you come up with the name and thinking a little bit about the packaging and expanding it on to, you know, bring on your first clients, I want to hear about the nitty gritty in terms of financing and bringing on some investors. And I believe that you were also on Kickstarter. So tell me about that experience.
I, at the beginning, was having a difficult time even getting off the ground to do R&D for the product, like once I had what I thought was the right thing. And my family sat down with me and they were like, okay, well, what's stopping you? You need to just do it. And I was like, well, money, like I can't afford it. And my brother was like, okay, I'm your first investor. Let's do it. And he and Eva invested in the company. And then because of that, I was able to take it one step further. And then I really slowly gathered friends and family investors kind of as needed, which is my own unique approach. But that's how I did it. And along the way, kind of beat myself up a lot about choices like, oh, I should have done it this way. I should do this. The reality is there are a million ways to raise capital to start a company. And you have to just do the authentic to yourself way. It's always been intimidating to me to go to proper investor meetings, given who I am as a person. I know my strengths and weaknesses, and that's always been something that's been really hard for me. The friends and family approach has been great. I did do a Kickstarter that we positioned as, and it was, pre-orders. So we needed a certain amount in order to do the final production for the first run. And so we did a Kickstarter that essentially people pre-ordered product. And when it was ready, they were the first to receive it. So that was really awesome and like a great way to just get the word out there about Superdirt.
One thing that I admire about your reflections as it relates to business building is that there are a million ways to build a company and everything is easier with hindsight being 2020. But the decisions that you have to make as a founder and an entrepreneur, especially in an area that requires so much tweaking and research and development, it's really hard to say that there's a perfect way to do it. And so I appreciate maybe there were some things that would have gone better, but you've learned throughout the process. And of course, you're going to make mistakes, but so much of it is just getting closer to success for you. You know, after Kickstarter, I know that you had a couple of really exciting things that happened between Amazon and a show that you were on. So tell me about the expansion of clients and getting more customers that knew about Superdirt.
Yeah, the Amazon show came up because of the Kickstarter campaign. We did really well in the first 24 hours and we got some badge, I forget what it was called, from Kickstarter about the success of it on the first day. But it's an Amazon show called Buy It Now. It was a very long process to get on that show. And turns out one of my guest judge was Gwyneth Paltrow, which was pretty real. And it was really awesome. You had to memorize 90 seconds of a pitch to a studio audience and no prompts, nothing. You literally just were in front of a camera and an audience doing your pitch. And then the audience got to like light up yes or no if they would buy it or not. And you had to get more than 15 for them to then pass you on to the judges. I think I got 93 because they tasted it too. I had samples. And then Gwyneth had rave reviews and it was awesome. It was the best way that I could have kicked off the launch of the company in a way.
What a cool, but also very high pressure experience to really be able to pitch. Yes.
I just found out I was pregnant.
Supermom. That's a really amazing experience to get in front of so many different potential customers, but then also get that validation from judges who experience a ton of different products and are sold a lot of different things too. So that's real, real validation. Yeah. Something that I would love to hear about is, so from that official launch, how has the company evolved since then? How has kind of both the product development evolved, but more so, you know, how are you thinking about the future evolution for Superdirt?
Honestly, it's been a really bumpy road. So right after the launch of that show, it was about 6 months after that, we went to do another manufacturing run with our co-packer and called them up to start to kick it off. And they informed me that they were closing their doors the next day. No warning, nothing. I thankfully had been doing a lot of research about co-packers and, you know, just to like have an understanding of what's out there and what co-packers are capable of. And so I was able to quickly pivot. But then formulas weren't transferred over properly. And so what they were developing for us wasn't accurate to what we had originally developed and started selling and pitched on Amazon. So we ended up having a long pause to get back to just the starting point of what we had already done and then launched those. And the reality is it really made me kind of reevaluate, okay, I love this product. Like I stand behind it 1,000%. It is so needed and good. And I can still make some really tiny tweaks that will make huge improvements to what exists. And so that's what we're doing right now. So we are taking an elective pause this time to reformulate a little bit and make it even better than what it was before.
CPG is brutal. It's really, really hard. Being shelf stable and working with really quality ingredients. And especially because you have a bar of excellence that is so high. So it must be hard to feel like, when will it be up to your standards to really feel satisfied with the product and maybe move on to some other flavors or ideas. But I appreciate the honesty around that. You know, obviously capital for inventory, manufacturing minimums, and just general distribution can be really challenging. What has been both the hardest part and the most validating part of building this?
The hardest part is the aspects that are out of your control. And then having customers who actually love the product, who want it, and you build momentum, and then you have these things that are really challenging that, like I said, are out of your control. We use all organic ingredients. Sometimes they're not available and we don't compromise. Like, we're not going to not use organic ingredients. We use some obscure ingredients that sometimes are not available. And like I said, you're relying on other people and other companies. And as a small startup, like, that puts you kind of lower on the totem pole. So there are certain things that you have to, I think the hardest part is having patience and confidence and just like continuing to persevere, knowing what you know about the actual product. The most validating is really the reception that we've had from people. The Amazon show was awesome for me because it was terrifying, absolutely terrifying. It was the week that I launched that I had product for the first time. So it was the first time anyone outside of like friends and family in my Kickstarter campaign were tasting them. And it was live on television. And to experience the light up of 93 out of 100 people and then the judges being really positive about it was incredibly validating. And for the right reasons, you know, taste and quality.
That's a really cool experience and story. Now, you are, you know, sitting in a portion of your evolution. When you think about Superdirt in the next 5 years, what does the future look like for you?
I'm very excited about this moment in time because I feel very strongly that we're on the precipice of like really exploding the company into the world because of these little tweaks that we're making. And because now I even just as a leader of the company have a lot more focus and stability in my own self in terms of how I want to move forward. And we're really excited to have some local stores and we're excited to expand that. We are selling direct to consumer, which is awesome, subscription and on Amazon. And so I'm really hoping to get a lot more visibility and let people know that we exist in the next 5 years. And I'm hoping to also launch either special flavors and or I have a second product line that I've been working on the side that I'm very, very excited about.
That's really exciting. I'm excited for this moment, but also what the future holds for you and for Superdirt. I always love to end these with a couple of rapid fire questions. So quick, instinctive answers, starting with, what is the best advice you've received?
Do it yourself. Somebody told me a long time ago, if you want to, don't wait for anyone else. Just do it. It doesn't matter if it's social media, if it's this, whatever aspect it is, figure it out and do it.
I love that. And there's probably no one who could have done this better than you. So that's good advice. What's the first thing that you do every morning?
I snuggle my 1-year-old.
So sweet. What does living a rich life mean to you?
Happiness. And part of happiness is being able to have the energy for happy, exciting things. And that's eating well, being well.
What do you wish you knew before starting your own company?
Oh, man. Patience. I think just patience.
And what are you dreaming about next?
Success.
It's happening. And that's so honest and so real. Kristen, I'm sure that there's a number of people who are listening that want to follow your journey and learn more about Superdirt. So where can they find you?
Our website, superdirtfoods.com. And then also on Instagram, we're at superdirtfoods. And my personal Instagram is at Kristen O'Connor Chef. Awesome. You get everything you need there.
That's so great. Thank you so much for spending time with me and talking to me and really diving into both the successes and the challenges in building a business.
Thank you, Alexis. This has been really fun.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Kristen O'Connor. As you heard, Kristen spent 6 years building Superdirt Foods while working as a private chef. She was developing recipes in between film sets, testing ingredients in spare moments, and figuring out how to make something that actually tastes good and is actually good for you. Most founders are trying to optimize for speed or efficiency or funding, but Kristen optimized for standards, even when it meant slowing down. Even when she had customers wanting the product and momentum building, she's made the hard decisions to ultimately make the best product for all of her customers. You can find Superdirt Foods Ballers on Amazon and at superdirtfoods.com. She has 6 amazing flavors, and I hope you all try them. If you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, and share this with a friend. This has been Dreaming Big, and I'm Alexis Allen. I'll see you next time.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.